We were never denied. In fact, we never ran into the situation where you were turned down as to where you were going to eat. And we ate a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And that never came to us. But we did hear people say when they went to the bars that sometimes they would take the glass and throw it out and break it while you were there so you could see it. But we never ran into this mm-hmm. kind of thing. And we went out quite a bit to eat.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you were staying in a hotel.
That's right. Now, as far as the jobs were concerned, when we had problems, even in NAACP, people were saying and coming and saying they were denied a job at AFCO, they were denied a job out here at Lacombing or wherever mm-hmm. the places are. And they were turned down at Metropolitan Insurance Company. And these are just the facts. Mm-hmm. But you see, what happened is they didn't have an organization at the time that would follow through with their problem. Mm-hmm. And they didn't feel that they could do it themselves. Because even at the time, a person could go and ask for a job. And if they say they don't have it, then they don't have it. You do nothing about it. But then the NAACP came along and we started saying it's something wrong mm-hmm. with this. And I think we should do something about it. And then this is what we started to do. We started to do something about it. People were satisfied when they told them, this house is not for sale, when a black person showed up. But we didn't take that. Okay, we'd send a white person. And they tell a white person it's for sale. So then we'd send the black person, they tell them, it's not for sale, it's been sold. Mm. So we kept following this through. And this is the kind of thing that they did with jobs and housing and every other thing.
While you were president of NAACP, how did you find working with the local politicians? Were they difficult to work with?
No, they weren't. The local politicians knew, they really didn't know what we were going to do. They were looking really for a vote. And the local politicians always wanted to be on the side that they thought would be right. You know, a good example is Mayor Tedesco at the time. When I was president, Mayor Tedesco was president, and he did everything he possibly could do to please NAACP because he felt that this group was a group that wanted to get something done, and he wanted us to press it because politicians can't afford to stick their necks out too far, so they need someone behind them pushing. And he enjoyed the NAACP because this is what we did.
So you feel he was sincere?
I really feel that he was sincere. Mm-hmm. I really feel that Tedesco was sincere. And because many times he just came to our rescue. And when we talked about the housing over on, in the Hall Neighborhood House area, mm-hmm. Mayor Tedesco called and said the houses, if they will tear that whole, it was an 18 building apartment in there. We had been fussing and fuming about that, and he called one afternoon and said it belonged to a corporation. They will either have to fix it up or they are going to have it torn down. But before they could have it torn down, it was burned down. Mm-hmm. But I would say another person who was a supportive kind of person, supportive, mm-hmm. was Mayor Kern. He tried his best to do whatever he could do, whatever we were asking for, and they thought we were right. The first thing that got me though is the fact that we fought against the blackface minstrel show.
No.
That was the first issue that we really got on, was that blackface minstrel show. A church group was putting it on. They had made all their plans and all. And we had a meeting here on a Sunday afternoon. And we said we were going to the press. And we did. Bob Thompson, John Lancaster, all of us got together and we fought that black-faced minstrel show. Frank Corbett, who had the intergroup council at the time, and we finally outlawed that black-faced minstrel. I don't think no one else has tried to have a black-faced minstrel in Bridgeport. And also we were on the Maids Incorporated at the time. That was an employment agency. Mm-hmm. And who recruited all these girls from down south and brought them up here in the hot summertime with their winter coats on and their and dragging the trunks through the street because they didn't know what kind of weather we had up here. They thought it was cold. And they put these girls in the homes, in many of the homes, paying $35 a week. $25 to $35 mm-hmm. a week. And we fought that. Mm-hmm. We felt it was wrong. And it was wrong. Mm-hmm. Those were two things that we started. Then at UPI, out here, United Postal Service, they didn't hire blacks either. They didn't hire, they were discriminating against blacks. And we demonstrated out there, I mean, for about 2 weeks, every afternoon.
Wow.
Till finally they gave us a job.
This was in the 1960s.
That's right, that's right. Against that, the UPI right out mm-hmm. there. And they employed, well, even later on, years later, you know, not during that year, but even after I started teaching. Mm-hmm. And my son was then in high school. And even later, in later years, they hired him as a big boss out there. You see, but it wasn't because I was demonstrating.
No.
I wasn't president of there.
Mm-hmm.
We had finished that.
Yeah.
But it opened up the way. And the youth group did this, the youngsters in Bridgeport did. But these were just a few things. And then we did some nice things too. We gave 5 debutante presentations for kids in Bridgeport.
This was the NAACP?
The NAACP. We gave 5 debutante presentations with girls and boys who were never exposed to getting out in front of the public, and we put on some lovely affairs, and the money that we raised from it, we gave scholarships to those kids to go to school. That's what we did. And then the Shakespeare Theater opened over here, and we had what you call a fall festival. We put on several of those to raise money for scholarships for kids. We've done some fine things for scholarships, which people just don't know about, but we did.
If you were to think back in the time that you were president of NAACP and as a member of the NAACP, what do you think might have been the greatest thing that the organization and yourself helped to accomplish?
I would say that the greatest thing that we helped to accomplish was to let to tell black people stand up for what they know that's right and not to be afraid. We have, you know, they used to be afraid to speak out. But I think that's the grandest thing and the greatest thing that we've ever done. We gave them some pride in themselves. Let them speak out, help themselves, help solve their problems. And I think that in doing that, it gave them some kind of feeling that I can help myself. I can speak for myself. And you can tell even right now in the community how some people speak, how they speak out.
Mm-hmm.
They're not afraid anymore. And I think that the whole movement of the civil rights, the whole area of it, the era of it, civil rights movement, I should say, gave black people that pride mm-hmm. all over the country. All over the country. And I think that this was one thing about being NAACP, is you know, that whatever one says, everybody says all across the country. If I say it's discrimination in housing, discrimination in employment, every chapter across the country is saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we say this. Every chapter of NAACP has tried to instill in black people a sense of pride. And a sense of saying I'm somebody and I'm going to speak up for my rights, and I think that this is what it is. Because we did now. In Bridgeport, we had black people who were afraid to be seen with us marching around City Hall. But now, they are proud. They used to ask, when are we going to march again? You
know? Used to it. Yeah. Mrs. Anderson, when you decided to go back to teaching, how difficult was it to get a job in Bridgeport?
Well, I'm telling you that I got a job in Bridgeport. It was the easiest thing I have ever had in my life. I got on the telephone and I called the superintendent of school. And I said, this is my last year that I will be president of NAACP, and I would like to get a job working with kids in Bridgeport, and I want to go back teaching. The superintendent said to me, well, Ms. Anderson, I will put an application in the mail to you tomorrow. Within the next 2 days, I got that application. I filled it out, I sent it back in. I got a telephone call from the superintendent of school saying to me, Ms. Anderson, we are going to consider you and we will give you, come down for an interview, and a date was set up for the interview. Mm-hmm. I went for that interview, and the next few days I received a contract in the mail.
My goodness.
Just that, like that. Mm-hmm. And also in addition to that, the superintendent said to me, Ms. Anderson, if you have anyone else from West Virginia that you know who would like to teach in Bridgeport, give me their name. Mm-hmm. That was just how it was done.
What differences did you find teaching in Bridgeport and from the time you taught in West Virginia?
In West Virginia, I was my own boss. Whatever I did was it. But here I was teaching and I had a supervisor or a principal. And of course, you had to go by standards that they set. I guess wherever you are, you teach under the boss. Mm-hmm. And in Bridgeport, I teach in Bridgeport, but I still think that teachers don't have enough voice. You know, in West Virginia, when you were given a class, you were responsible for it. You were given a school, you were responsible for it. Nobody came around and banged you across your head and say, I don't want you to teach that class this way. Mm-hmm. Teach it this way. As long as you were accomplishing results in West Virginia, that's what they expected you to do. Mm-hmm. And they would tell you that they hired you because you are a teacher. You have had the training. But I have worked here in Bridgeport, and I have my 6 year just like everybody else. But this 6 year seems to be able to say a little bit more than this 6 year, and I got my education at UB just like they did.
I know what you're saying. As a member of NAACP, as a past president of NAACP, and as an educator in Bridgeport, what were your feelings about the desegregation suit that, the NAACP tried to or started to initiate?
We did initiate that that report, and when we first started that desegregation report, I thoroughly believed in what we were doing. I thoroughly believed that children were being denied many things in the city. But they messed around for so many years and didn't do one thing about it. And many black people lost courage in the whole thing. They just felt like, if you can give me something for myself, you know, for black folks, I could care less about whether I go to the school with the white folks or not. Just give me what I need to work in my own school. You know? And I think that the decision was handed down in 1954. And in 1984, we're still talking about school desegregation. You know, I think many people are disheartened. You lose faith. So I personally feel that if the way to set up is now and with whom I'm coming into contact with now, mm-hmm. if I can get the money to get all the resources that I need to teach, a black kid can learn in a black setup. Doesn't have to sit with a white person to learn. The only thing you get is how to get along with different colors. Mm-hmm. You know, but as far as learning is concerned, I'm all in favor of giving me the money and I can get what I need. That's what I feel about desegregation now. And I was one of the ones who went through it, who helped to draw up the report and put it together. And Bridgeport will never say that very report that we put together was that was the report that went to Washington, D.C. And when ABCD came a part of Bridgeport, they took the housing report that we prepared, they took the education report that we prepared. We had congressmen and senators to come here, and we had a discussion with them here. And they had a meeting, and they took these reports back to Washington. But nobody ever knows anything about all of this, you know? But this is what happened. And we were saying this, that...
Excuse me.
We were saying then that the children in Bridgeport, even when they were integrated in the schools, they were set aside as the bust children, children that were bust into the neighborhood. And they weren't really, they were some of, in some of the schools right here, the kids were put into different rooms and just sat there all day long, waiting. So and even those who were bussed out to some of the other areas, I understand that those kids were sitting in the back row of the classroom or sitting here and there and were never called upon as part of the class. So if that's the way integration is going to be, I would really want to see it.
Children still lose out.
Yeah, so they are. They feel like they're not a part of it.
Mrs. Anderson, how would you say Bridgeport has changed from the time that you got here to today?
Well, I am not too sure that much change has taken place. I'm not too sure of that. The only thing that I see is that we do have more Spanish-speaking people and more black people who moved into the city. And I'm quite sure that it wasn't so bad when there were only a few. But when it becomes necessary to have to share something with a lot of more Spanish people, a lot more Negroes, or black people, it may become a little more difficult. Now Bridgeport still has a long way to go. First of all, I think about them running a black mayor for the city, mm-hmm. and there was no reason why they couldn't have gotten a black mayor. If he were white, he would have made it. But Charlotte Tisdale happened to have been black. Mm-hmm. And he didn't make it. And that was why he didn't make it, because he's black. Mm-hmm. I'm listening to this. So Bridgeport hasn't changed. Other cities have done so much more than Bridgeport. And they're the last one. I don't live in Bridgeport, and sometimes you're sort of reluctant to talk about a place you don't live in. I can talk about Stratford too, because Stratford isn't doing a thing. Stratford is a little prejudiced town, and I know that. You know, they can hide and look at the Bridgeport, and many of us who live outside of Bridgeport, I think we ought to keep our mouths closed and talk about our own town. I think I could talk about Stratford.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So Stratford doesn't, as far as I know, I don't know anybody black that Stratford has that's in any place that's important. And they've had one or two black people on the Board of Education. Well, I would say Oreos on the black mm-hmm. Board of Education, but they certainly weren't speaking to black folks. Because we had one black man on there, who talked about we didn't need integration. So we certainly weren't learning anything there. But I think sometimes when we, I don't see any change in Stratford. Now I'm gonna say it in Stratford. Now Bridgeport, I can't say too much, I don't live there. I don't pay taxes in Bridgeport. But I do notice that we have had some good things going in Bridgeport, which they didn't go for. They had a good mayor in Bridgeport they could have had, and they had a superintendent in school, which they got after she fought.
Mm.
So people in Bridgeport hasn't awakened yet.
Mrs. Anderson, as we get ready to close this interview, is there anything else that you think is important that you would just like to say before we stop?
Well, I don't know. I have enjoyed living in this area. If I had to do it all over again, I think I would still do the same thing. I may be able to work a little harder with some of the other groups that we've had around here, but I really enjoy this area, and I think that there are a lot of potential.
You know, as I went through some of your newspaper clippings and things, I realized that you were a great force in Bridgeport history. You know, I'm not talking just about Black history in Bridgeport, but Bridgeport's history. You made a lot of changes, and I'm glad that there's somebody like you around to have done those things.
Well, I appreciate you coming and asking me these questions. I'm sorry that I can't just give you all of the information because I'm sort of forgetful of some.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have boxes of material that we could go through sometimes.
Oh, I'd love that.
Pick out some. As tonight I went through some materials there that were very important. We did, I had to think about the time when we had Dr. King here.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a picture.
I scanned through this. You see, Dr. King, at the time when we started working in the civil rights movement, Dr. King was well known, but not as well known as he is today or as the years went by. He had, his secretary was Dora McDonald, who lived in Bridgeport. And Dora and I became very good friends. So she told me one day, she said, I'm going to Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm going to be Dr. King's secretary. And I said, oh, isn't that grand? So throughout the years, I never kept in contact with Dora, but I would write to Dr. King's headquarters. So I did write and ask Dr. King if he could come here and speak. That was when the old Central High School was there. And he said at the time he couldn't come, his schedule was so great, he couldn't do it. So one Sunday afternoon, Wyatt T. Walker called me from Hartford and said, Ms. Anderson, he said, Dr. King is speaking in Hartford, and he doesn't want to go back to Atlanta. He does have a couple of days open. Could you arrange to have him in Bridgeport? He said, maybe you could. I said, oh, yes, I would love to, because I know exactly how to do it. So I contacted all of the ministers.
Mm-hmm.
We had a meeting here at this house, and we got that thing together, and we had Dr. King to come to Bridgeport, and he spoke. That was up here at the old Central High School. And as a gift, from Wyatt T. Walker and Dr. King, they gave me this Black History book in a library.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dictionary?
Uh-huh.
You've seen them.
Yeah.
You've seen them, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
You have some in school?
Yeah, I have some in the school. Yeah.
As a result, they gave me that set of books.
Oh, that's nice.
Because they said, thank you so much, and show it to your friends,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they would want a set.
Nice.
So Dr. King came, and then Bridgeport got him later. Bridgeport University.
University, right.
But we had him here first, and Rabbi Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, at the time, Rabbi Nelson, oh, he was a terrific person who worked so closely with us.
Mm-hmm.
We had all kinds of good, wonderful people working with us. This is why we were able to be successful. All the ministers worked. And now you can't find that, but we had rabbis, we had Catholic priests, we had nuns, we had a lot of good people working. And this is why I think that we did a lot with NAACP. We had a lot of intelligent, know-how people like Eugene Spear, Scott Melville, John Merchant. And these were good people who knew what they were doing. And I think that was the success of the organization. Because you could delegate a responsibility and didn't have to worry about it being taken care of. It was taken care of, you know.
Do you envision the NAACP returning to that level?
Well, I hope so. I hope so. At this point, I have some mixed emotions, but I think that if you find the right person who has the time and the energy, because I was not able to take care of my family, so I know what it means. I was gone all the time. And I think it has to be someone who's dedicated, who believe in it, who would follow through with everything. And you have to read the paper and keep up with everything that's going on. And I think that right now, the people we're getting are people who don't know the background of NAACP. Mm-hmm. And you have to be an NAACP for years. Mm-hmm. This is why they always say, all these old folks, they've been in there for years. But the reason why the NAACP keep them there is because they want someone who know the background and who know what you're doing at the time. You know, you've got to be ready to answer a person overnight,
mm-hmm.
or at the spur of a moment. And the leadership that we get now, they'll say, well, who asked you to make that statement? NAACP can't wait for somebody to make a statement. This is why you keep your old people there, so they will know exactly what they're doing. But this is what the young crowd said now. They'll read something in the paper, like someone called me the other day, well, who asked him to make that statement? See, I'm saying they don't know NAACP. You don't have to ask. You know, you do what you know that's right. But I don't know when we'll return back to the way that it should be. It's not in the right place. I don't know what's happening right now. I just really can't say. And I'm very disheartened about it. I really am. You really hardly know NAACP is in town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a force that people will listen to.
Mm-hmm.
They don't give you credit for what you do, but the Klan is afraid of it. And the people at City Hall is afraid of it. In any City Hall in the country, they don't want NAACP on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, because the average politician doesn't want to see anything in the press about them.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has to be good.
Right.
And NAACP point up there, you know, people get the idea that you want to be seen and heard. But that's not the issue. You've got to keep NAACP in the paper so people will know that you're there, because nobody else is going to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep your own self there. And I just think that what I would like to see, a good man take over the NAACP. The one we have now is good. He's good. But he's old. You know, and it takes a good, young, spunky person ready to get up and go any time, any minute, and be really like that.
Mm-hmm.
The person who really was the person was Reverend Williams.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
He was really a good guy. Mm-hmm. This man knows the answer to give. He knows what to say. You see, but many other things things didn't go right. Well, you can't say, but he was a terrific person as far as president concerned. Yeah, so what is it, Rachel?
Yes, Johnson.
What?
Okay. I guess this is about the end, and I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
Well, thank you. You know, I appreciate